On June 17th, the Islamic Republic of Iran will be holding general elections to elect representatives to sit in the Majlis, or parliament, as well as a new president. Outgoing President Mohammad Khatami is not permitted to run again for the post as he has held the seat for two consecutive terms. Khatami's landslide election victory in 1997 was hailed by many people, especially youth living in Iran, as a sign of reformist change. Joining us on the line to give us a perspective on the term of Khatami and the upcoming elections is Shahram Kholi, who is a PhD candidate in political theory. Hello, Shahram.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Since Khatami came into power in 1997, there were a lot of hopes put on his presidentship that he would bring a lot of reform. But, of course, the way that the Iranian government is set up, or parliamentary system is set up, is that there is a supreme leader who is at the top, and as well a guardian council, I believe, who is selected by that supreme leader. Underneath that is the Majlis, or the parliament, and the president, of course. So many have said that he wasn't able to put in all of the reforms that he had initially campaigned on in 1997. Could you briefly give us a little bit of an outline about what the legacy you feel Khatami will have, and now that he is outgoing president?
I think perhaps the most important legacy of the Khatami era was to show that Iranians, should they have some proper leadership and venues of organization, they can challenge the present clerical elite that is using its enshrined powers in the constitution in order to keep the elected institutions of the Islamic Republic at bay. One of the most important problems with the present system is the power structure as has been designed in the 1988 amended constitution of the Islamic Republic, in which the supreme leader appoints a guardian council that is made up of six clerics and six layman jurists, and they have every right to qualify the candidates who run for all sorts of elected institutions. And as a result, they are effectively determining the outcome of the elections, whether it is presidential or parliamentary. And this supreme leader, at the same time, is the commander-in-chief of the intelligence and security forces, as well as the armed forces. So as you see, the supreme leader, who is a theologian, exerts a lot of control, effectively, on anybody who is even reform-minded or liberal-minded enough to want to introduce anything that is important for the equality between men and women, and or reforming the situation in the workplaces. We have a lot of problem with respect to the labor movement. So, and social justice issues, we should not forget that the clerical elite establishment in Iran is supported by a very hardline and conservative merchant class that are called the Bazaar. And so there is some sort of a mercantile capitalism that is supporting this this conservative cleric that has been in power since the death of Ayatollah Khomeini. And ironically enough, Ayatollah Khamenei, who is the present supreme leader, he was the president when Ayatollah Khomeini was alive. And in one of the Friday prayers, he was not sure whether the supreme leader could exert such powers. And as soon as he became supreme leader, he started to exert such powers. And at various occasions, he actively interfered in the reforms that President Khatami wanted to introduce. One example of it was that about 4 years ago, the press law was about to be reformed in order to make sure that the newspapers are more free, because the judiciary has almost has closed at least 30 to 40 important newspapers that were reformists. And I mean, like newspapers, weeklies, monthlies, magazines. And the supreme leader ordered the parliament. He sent a letter to the parliament and ordered the parliament to stop discussing this bill. And the Speaker of the Parliament was forced to withdraw the bill by the order of the supreme leader. Even Ayatollah Khomeini, at the time of his life, did not send such a explicit letter like this. I mean, he would do so behind the scene, but such an explicit action, interference with the actions of an elected body, was really unprecedented in the history of the Islamic Republic. And what happened, of course, last year was that the Guardian Council, that is the watchdog for the qualification of the candidates, effectively stacked the conservative candidates against the reformist candidates. And as you know, right now we have a conservative parliament in Iran. So Khatami's legacy is not that significant, but that it created a precedent that the present conservative clerical structure in Iran can be challenged should people be given the opportunity to organize and are empowered by some viable political leadership.
Now, one of the biggest issues in the 1997 elections was voter turnout. The huge turnout that elected Khatami made international headlines for weeks after the elections. What are the discussions or predictions about voter turnout this time around in the elections coming up on June 17th?
Well, the importance of the voter turnout for the Islamic Republic, despite the fact that it relies on the divine right of the supreme cleric as the supreme leader, is that they are very concerned that they have this facade of popular legitimacy. And they are very concerned about it, and they have been always concerned that a good number of eligible voters turn up at the polls. This time around, the importance of the turnout is critical because the former president, Mr. Rafsanjani, who became president between 1988 and 1997, has come back and has declared his candidacy. He is still a conservative candidate, but he has always been a rather pragmatic one. In fact, in the first mandate of his, 1988 to 1992, he appointed the present president, President Khatami, as the Minister of Culture. And actually, a lot of reforms, like one of the reasons that we have such a viable and famous film industry in Iran, and our directors are so famous now in the world, was because President Rafsanjani supported, to a large extent, President Khatami. But at the time, the parliament was conservative, and the supreme leader was obviously and is conservative, and they forced Rafsanjani to ask Khatami to resign because they detested, of course, the film industry and its liberal approach. And as you see, this President Rafsanjani's return as a candidate is going to create a split vote in a way. I mean, and this is my political analysis, because the conservatives are coming with at least three viable candidates. They're coming with four candidates. And then the reformists, they are coming with four candidates. One of them is a woman who will most probably be disqualified, and the other one is the head of the Freedom Movement of Iran, who will be disqualified because the Freedom Movement of Iran does not recognize the supremacy of the cleric as the absolute leader of the Islamic Republic. So there remains two candidates amongst the reformers, and then effectively four candidates on the part of the conservatives. Rafsanjani's return in this game may create a lot of split vote, because good deal of working class and middle class, and when you talk about middle class, we are not talking about middle class according to the Western standards. We are talking about people who are not really working class, but who are not really rich, and they are barely surviving. Working class is really poor in Iran currently. So the urban middle class and working class largely voted in 1997 for President Khatami and his mandate, and they turned up basically in millions. The fear is that now that President Rafsanjani has come back and wants to become president again, this would create a split vote, because there are some traditionalist constituencies in the rural areas of Iran who have traditionally voted for the conservatives. So he might attract some of that vote. And at the same time, he might attract some of the vote in the major urban centers. And we should not forget that right now, just barely 36% of Iranians live in towns that are below 100,000. So a majority of the people now live in major urban centers. And Rafsanjani's return will create a very unpredictable situation if people who voted for Khatami and showed up en masse at the polls in 1997, a majority of them decide not to show up. It might create a situation that effectively President Rafsanjani and his pragmatic platform might win and might come out as the winner.
I wanted to ask you about the issues that are sort of central to this particular election. Could you give us some insight into some of the issues that are being debated?
Sure. I will start from the most internationally sensitive issue. As you know, Iran wants to resume the uranium enrichment. This is happening at the same time that North Korea has started some activities. And as you know, Iran and North Korea are still part of the so-called Axis of Evil, as proclaimed by President Bush. So the question and the point is that there are many people who believe that Rafsanjani is going to be the only possible interlocutor who can negotiate with Americans and the Europeans. And they do not believe that the possible reformist candidate who perhaps has any chance to win, who is Dr. Main, the former Minister of Higher Education, they do not think that because of his reformist and kind of leftist platform, the conservatives would allow him to have any say in the foreign policy, because we have a National Security Council that is effectively controlled by the Supreme Leader. And, of course, if a conservative comes, the fear is that because most of the conservative candidates, they have Revolutionary Guard backgrounds, it is possible that they would be very uncompromising and push Iran to the edge of some sort of a confrontation with the United States. So most observers and many people that I talk to in Iran, they believe that Rafsanjani, most people may decide that Rafsanjani would be a pragmatic reason for most people to decide that, okay, we do not want an outright confrontation with a belligerent U.S. at this point. And as you know, we suffered a lot during the Iran-Iraq war. And as you know, most Western European countries and the United States support Iraq during that war. And Rafsanjani, when he became president between 1988 and 1997, he really tried to create a platform of development. But since most of the revolutionary institutions that are controlled by the Supreme Leader also control about 60% of the Iranian economy, Rafsanjani didn't get a chance to really introduce anything. And in fact, Rafsanjani's government ended up becoming a very corrupt government. Now the concern is corruption, and the reformists are trying to say that Rafsanjani is too conservative to introduce any fundamental rights, equality rights reforms. Rafsanjani is too right-wing to introduce any welfare and social assistance reforms. Rafsanjani is too conservative to introduce the kind of reforms that we need to introduce to face some of the realities in modern Iran. For example, it has been said in some of the news websites today that there are around 60,000 people who are affected by AIDS in Iran right now. So there are certain issues that are kind of taboo in an Islamic society, and they do not believe that Rafsanjani would be able to pull off the kind of legislation and the kind of reform. But the opponents argue that actually Rafsanjani is the kind of person who would be able to do that, because the reformists had a very confrontational approach vis-a-vis the conservatives, and they basically provoked the Supreme Leader and caused a stalemate in terms of the development of the country. So as you see, Iranian people are being forced to make a decision based upon a very survivalist approach vis-a-vis foreign threats and national problems. And of course, we have a lot of ethnic strife in the rural parts of Iran that has to be addressed. And most of them have economic causes. So we might end up seeing that Rafsanjani will run on a campaign, and will run a platform that will introduce himself as the best possible compromise vis-a-vis the problems that the Islamic regime itself is facing and the people by means of the Islamic regime are facing. Of course, if the elections were more free, because as you know, there are around 1,010 people who have registered, but according to the constitution, the only people who can be qualified are religious and political statesmen, which basically means that most of the people who are not known as political and religious reputables will be disqualified, including women. So we will have to see whether the next after the next 10 days that the Guardian Council disqualifies many of these people, perhaps around 95% of these people, how many of these candidates will come out, how many of the Conservatives will decide to close ranks in favor of the other Conservatives, and how President Rafsanjani, who has come back to run again, will change his rhetoric.
We spoke earlier about voter turnout, and I'm just wondering what the shift has been since 1997, because you've been mentioning a number of pretty important issues in terms of dealing with issues such as AIDS, as well as increased ties with European countries and America and the United States, in addition to social welfare and poverty issues in Iran. What has been the shift, as you see, in sort of like the psyche of people in facing this election? Were the disappointments that came from the Khatami regime, are they sort of leading people not to be excited about this election and not to want to participate in mass numbers?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the general feeling. But let me caution you that Iranian people are amongst the most unpredictably and politically active people, perhaps in the Middle East, if not in the broader Central Asia and the Caucasus and the Middle East. And while nobody predicts any sort of velvet revolution to take place soon, most people don't necessarily blame President Khatami or the reformists. They blame Khatami for not confronting the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. But people are unfortunately disappointed in general, and because of that general disappointment with the reform and political reform, because the Khatami campaign in 1997 identified the untransparent and unaccountable political structure of the regime as the major cause of government and revolutionary institution corruption. And since we suffer from a lot of corruption in that regard, we are basically as bad as Italy right after the Second World War. There are all sorts of mafia groups that are effectively, one way or another, related to many different parts of government. And in fact, in the first 2 years of Khatami, Khatami had to deal with a group of so-called rogue intelligence agents who had managed to kill many writers, authors, and intellectual dissidents, and it created a crisis within the regime itself. And then, of course, they had to polish it up and patch it up and say that, no, these were not really related to the regime, and they were a bunch of really hardliner extremists who went out of their way to kill these dissidents. And, of course, we still don't know who did those killings. And we still, and many people who tried to disclose these murders and the issues that were related to them were put in jail, some of them, including Akbar Ganji, who was a revolutionary veteran, is still in jail. So this atmosphere basically has created, unfortunately, a sense of disappointment with the political process, and that is why many people think that, okay, maybe we need to have somebody who is like a third party between the reformists and the conservatives and can talk to both of these people and can talk to increasingly belligerent Americans, and which is President Rafsanjani. And maybe if he becomes president, we would have some sort of a viable economic development. At least the present corruption in the government will be streamlined, because the corruption that Khatami inherited from the Rafsanjani period basically turned into some sort of a rentiering culture in political terminology. And rentiering basically means that many people, officials in revolutionary institutions and or government, turned their public offices into some sort of a shop to make money out of it. And they basically sold the services that the government was supposed to provide people for free, and or they use it in order to make money for their cronies. And that created a lot of economic instability and a lot of fragmentation in the Iranian society. And as a result of that, we have fragmented society in which there is a very, very thin layer of extremely rich people and a very, very large strata of poor people. And most of these poor people, I should say, that are educated. Like, we have the population is largely young and university educated, and yet because of lack of viable, not necessarily IMF-style, foreign direct investment. And because of the fact that we still suffer from many sorts of U.S. Sanctions that were imposed upon us since the hostage-taking crisis in the early 1980s, our economy is very stagnant. And, of course, China has become a very important player in Iran right now because there are a lot of Chinese companies that are, of course, proxies in a way of the U.S. companies investing in Iran. And the only fear that perhaps left-leaning intellectuals have is that in view of the important role that China plays and the fact that we know that Rafsanjani is the kind of person who wants to bargain with everybody, whether in Iran or outside Iran, the system of government becomes more untransparent and more unaccountable. And in the end, what would happen is that Rafsanjani's mandate becomes a mandate for the survival of the Islamic Republic of Iran and not necessarily for a viable and sustainable development for the Iranian nation.
I have one last question for you about what the result of this election will have on the neighboring region, on what is happening in Iraq and also what is happening in Palestine, in Israel. How do you think the potential election of Rafsanjani will affect these issues?
To be quite honest with you, there is no doubt that Mr. Rafsanjani is, if anybody follows his works and writings during the past 30, 35 years, 40 years, one would know that he is a very pro-Palestinian person, and a large number of clergy are definitely like that. However, we should not forget that, and we have evidence for this, that between 1980 to 1984, Iran bought weapons and military instruments from Israel through Indonesia and Malaysia. And Rafsanjani was an important confidant of Ayatollah Khomeini at the time. And then, of course, when Rafsanjani in the last portion of the 1980s became the deputy commander-in-chief of the armed forces by the order of Ayatollah Khomeini, Rafsanjani, of course, turned his back to Israel and decided to pursue a different policy with Iraq. What we will see, perhaps, is that Iran under Rafsanjani will try to use all its levers, anything that it has available to it from its powerful influence on the Iraqi Shiite population, and of course the influence that Iran exerts amongst the Kurdish leaders, as well as the influence that Iran enjoys through the Hezbollah in Lebanon and other factions in Palestine, to press and put America under pressure in all fronts in order to get the best deal. And I am sure that Rafsanjani will try to do that through all these political and diplomatic levers and, in a way, economic levers. And what we will see is in the next 2 years, in my opinion, if, of course, President George Bush does not run out of patience, we will see a more diplomatically active Iran. But there are other factors that we should not forget. The present supreme leader is not necessarily a cool-headed person. He might put Rafsanjani under pressure. His conservative confederates in the parliament might put Rafsanjani under a lot of pressure, as they did between 1988 to 1997. Of course, Rafsanjani is not without without recourse. Rafsanjani is a member of House of Experts, is a very influential member of House of Experts, and House of Experts has the right, technically and theoretically, it has never exercised this right, to put the supreme leader under questioning. And in fact, the House of Experts elects the supreme leader, and the present supreme leader was appointed as a result of the power brokering that Rafsanjani did right after Ayatollah Khomeini's death in 1988. And as a result of that, Rafsanjani became president and Khomeini became the supreme leader. So one would say that, yeah, the conservatives are still commanding a lot of power in the Islamic Republic. But on the other hand, Rafsanjani is around 70 years old, is a revolutionary veteran. He was in jail for some time under the Shah. He was very active in creating the Islamic Republic. He is one of the architects of the Islamic Republic, and he knows many things about the strengths and weaknesses of the Islamic Republic. And he has proven to be a pragmatic diplomat as well. So it is possible that we would not see if the Supreme Leader and President Bush on either side don't run out of patience. Maybe Afsanjani would be able to broker a deal. But again, let me reiterate that. That may not mean sustainable development and more democratic, transparent, and free system for Iran and for the rights, basic rights of the Iranian peoples. It might just lead to sustain the survival of the Islamic Republic of Iran's elite and the present power structure.
And finally, could you give people interested in finding more information about the elections some information?
Well, yes, actually, I would like to report to you that opendemocracy.net has come up with a blog that is very interesting, and weblogs, as you know, are becoming extremely important. It is called Iran Scan 1384. And if your audience is interested, they can go and basically look at this blog, and they are linking to other bloggers. And it is a very democratic way of connecting to some of the bloggers who are inside Iran or outside Iran and are in contact with the people in Iran. And you can basically update yourself on a daily basis until the 17th of June about the developments concerning this presidential election.
Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
We've been joined on the line by Shahram Kholi, who is a PhD candidate in political theory.